Mini-episode 1917 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1917. You have with you here today two of your favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Jake Digman. And we are, if we're together on the show, a lot of times it's either to talk pro wrestling or MMA. In this case, it would be sports entertainment since it's the Fed. So we are here to talk WrestleMania 42. A card which I know, I have no doubt whatsoever that Jake is far more invested in than I am. But obviously, I know this is something that we need to cover on this show. And my gratitude to Jake for coming on and doing this with me knows no bounds, as always. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun. And even though, again, much of what they do doesn't interest me, Jake, but talking about the sport of kings with you always interests me. So I appreciate it, brother.
Well, thank you for having me on, Rick, and I appreciate those kind words. And I guess I'm going to flip the script right away, and I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
On average, how many hours of WWE programming would you say you have seen in the past year?
In the past year? I saw SummerSlam and whatever, but like if you're just talking the weekly programming,
yes,
it might be a stretch to get into hours plural. I know what's happening. I know what's happening, but I don't have Netflix right at present, and I don't really have any interest in watching SmackDown. If you're picking up what I'm putting down here and what I'm about to say, I did hear that there might be some things that might be more up the alley of me and you in terms of along with Tony Khan, I think the smartest men on earth as far as booking pro wrestling today. But the problem is with utilizing this gentleman in there is that, again, with two brands, and if you're going to have some guys like that that are assigned to more than one brand, there's only so much impact that you can have because you're running two sort of smaller feds together. And the whole thing is too, like, and I've covered this with you before as a guy who's really been more way more of an AEW loyalist the last couple of years. That, like, I used to have hope that when Triple H took over, it would be like the NXT black and gold days. And then he did. And it was like, oh, but this is still the house that Vince built. And with TKO, it really is the house that Vince built. I mean, you're operating within that, giving as much, I guess, pro wrestling as you can within the sports entertainment universe. By the way, this is minus the civility. Civility is not something Vince McMahon was known for. Senility. I meant to say senility. The senility that Vince has exhibited for much of the 21st century. But aside from that, I find it to be essentially like the same product and like better in some ways, but not as good as it was a year or two ago from everything that I'm seeing here. So it's a thing where, yeah, I mean, I'm not subjecting myself to a lot of the week to week type stuff because, I mean, I've watched the Fed before. I know what I'm getting, Jake. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And, there's nothing wrong with that because there's the problem with it. There's a lot of Vince-isms that I really wish would go away that, like, are still prevalent. That
really?
An entire generation of the audience has been like, okay, one of them, for example, which I just think it's ridiculous where the suspension of disbelief goes way too far is when somebody comes out to the ring and then they're making their entrance and they go to the commercial break and then they go to an ad break and then they go to a promo backstage and then they go to something else. And the same person who's supposed to be fiery mad waiting to talk is waiting in the ring during the 6 minutes, and you've now killed that crowd. Just imagine, in like, you know, the height of the, I'm just going to use Steve Austin because he was like the, or the Rock back in his day. Just imagine if, like, you know, Steve Austin, the glass shattered, and all of a sudden they go, we're going to break, we'll come back, so cold to be out here talking. And then all of a sudden they go to like seven different skits in the back, and 5 minutes the crowd's dead. And it's like, you're killing your live audience, which in turn kills your television program. Like, just have the guy come out, do all that stuff, then have the guy come out afterwards. You want that buildup. You want that climax. It's like, why, okay, to compare it to MMA, one of the things that has been brought up in our events is they always wanted to begin the show with something they called the, they call like the Parade of Champions, where all the athletes come out at the beginning. And I'm always vehemently against it because you only have that one time for the audience to see the athlete or performer to get that initial excitement. Like, oh my God, there they are. You know, you only get that one time. And if you're bringing them out and you go, oh my God, there they are, and then they're just standing around doing nothing, you've just humanized them. And they're no longer a larger than life, you know, person, like entity, whatever, on the show. They're just a guy. And
right.
I don't know. I remember the first time I saw that live was when they had the ill-fated WWECW reboot, and Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman were literally just in there screwing off with the crowd because there was nothing else to do as they're watching some video play out, and then it comes back to the ring and they have this blood that's like Extreme Rules match with some people they're mad at. I just, you know, those are just a couple of the, one of them at least, that I think should be restructured and gone away with because it's too, it's just too far unbelievable. I know it's one of those things amongst many others that chase people away over the years.
That's an excellent point. And when you talk about that, and as far as the degree to which guys are humanized and not in a good way, that's almost kind of reminiscent of, as I think back over a period of time, and I get why they chose the circumstance the way that they did it, as far as when they broke Lex Luger away from the Horsemen, but doing it in a bunkhouse stampede where he's like in a t-shirt and jeans, the same as everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, this is the guy that's supposed to be your next superhuman, you know, babyface guy, your Hulk Hogan. And this is the light that he's being seen in when you do that. So the WWF/E, generally speaking, not including what you're talking about, has been at the forefront of the industry as far as presentation and of trying to get these guys over as stars. But it's a thing where everything that Vince was doing and calling it sports entertainment and trying to treat it as something separate and distinct from pro wrestling, it's almost as though it was made in a lab to sort of gel with what corporate America would do with it, because that's what's happening now with TKO. And we'll get into this with TKO on their alleged involvement in some of the big storylines here for Mania. But it's a thing of the whole corporatizing of it. It's easy to see on the surface when you're talking about the monster ticket prices that are not doing any favors as far as getting a full house in Las Vegas either night, and all the things that they do to try to grasp and just greedily grasp for money. But just the whole presentation of it as well, which is a thing where, I mean, and I think decades ago, if I'm going to go back again to like the end of Jim Crockett Promotions and the beginning of WCW, guys like Ole Anderson bemoaning that like corporate America doesn't know what to do with pro wrestling. Corporate America's always looked down on pro wrestling. Sports entertainment, well, hey, maybe you're talking a different style here. Hey, maybe you're talking about something we as corporate America can do business with. And I think that's why it leaves me cold, Jake, as opposed to pro wrestling. That's just kind of where I'm at right now.
And I get that, and I actually 100% agree with you on that. I'm at the point now where if I never go to another WWE event with the way it is right now, I'm content. And that has more to do, that has a lot to do with the price gouging, which is just ridiculous. Professional wrestling is supposed to be cheap entertainment for families. That's the whole market of this, is you recruit the kids in. We watched it when we were kids. Very rarely, it happens, but like, you know, very rarely do people pop in when they're in their mid-40s and pick up pro wrestling. Like, it does happen, but you're more inclined to include kids, and then on top of that, kids have to go with their parents, and it's just become so, TKO is looking at this like it is a fight night, something I know a lot about. That is a different atmosphere and a different thing that you're selling, because a lot of times it's I see it all the time where you have the people that are in the front row that are there in a status that they are every show, they buy the VIP seats and they sit there and it's all about being seen. And it goes back to the days of boxing with that. Wrestling is not, at one point it was, but it will never be that. And if we continue going down the path that we're on, and I've heard something, I read something, they were going to lower ticket prices or something this summer, which is great. But also at the same time, it's like, I can only speak for me personally. I've experienced so many things and events over the course. I just say Rock Hogan is always my go-to. Match quality, meh, but as far as a live event moment in time, that it's one of those things that's captured in a bottle. Nothing I could ever go to could repeat something like that. And also, I'm not in the same mental capacity, mindset that I was for when I was, 20 years old or whatever it was when that happened. Now I see a lot of guys that are my age and older or younger taking their kids to shows and their kids. And that's really what it's all about is, having those moments with your kids to share something you love and pass on for the kind of people who are into that sort of thing. If you pick up what I put down.
Yep.
But it's like you're pricing that out. So what comes next? Because the guy that's going to spend $10,000 for fight night is going there because he knows this person is really going to beat the crap out of each other. They're really going to fight. That's the story you're selling. When you go to, you might get them once or twice with I might get to see the people of my youth, which is the one thing that they're still reliant on is, it's like, don't forget the Attitude Era. We can't. You bring it up constantly.
Right.
And it's interesting to me to see, the next generation of what's really weird is for an example of this one, Randy Orton is, and we'll get into that, is an absolutely, he is beloved. No matter what their booking is, he's going to be beloved that night. Going into, because people who grew up watching Randy Orton are the ones who can afford to pay for the tickets to come see the show.
Yeah, that is going to happen. And when you talk about the Attitude Era, one of the commonalities with now, and this is, I'm not going in a direction that you're going to expect at all when I say this, also, commonality with the 80s boom is that one of the things that brought them to an end was it really had nothing to do with wrestling itself. Yes, the booking got worse. Yes, the product got a little stale, whatever. But what was one of the big factors in it? The economy. The recession of 1990 had a lot to do with it, then going into the Gulf War. Early 2000s, dot-com boom implodes. 9/11 happens. The economy's in the crapper for a period of time. Right now, and again, as we say this, we are a day into what is hopefully a peace that is going to hold up in the Middle East here. But that's a thing where, again, I hate to say it, it could still go pear-shaped. And if it does, this could be the worst disaster of our lifetime economically. None of us lived through the Great Depression. I don't want to live through 2.0. Looks like we're dodging that for the moment. But regardless, things don't look good. I am convinced that a big, 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 big part of why the ticket sales are soft in Las Vegas right now is the price of living, the cost of living, the inflation, the way that is eating a hole in people, and you're expecting them to fly out to Las Vegas and pay these prices. And Las Vegas being a town that, and I don't understand the economics of this. I've seen various things on it. It's like, they only want to cater to the uber rich now. And I'm thinking to myself, there can't be enough uber rich to keep every freaking place in Las Vegas afloat. Because, you would think they're only going to stay like the creme de la creme places. But anyways, regardless, Las Vegas is in a weird and not great place right now to begin with. You just were there last year. You've burned out the territory, so to speak, as far as Southern Nevada goes. So there are factors outside of what is undeniably a softening WWE product that have led to where they're at right now, to where they're like, brother, can you buy a ticket?
I mean, so just Circling back on something you mentioned with the economy, one of my late mentors when I was in my early 20s had worked on Wall Street. He had worked in the SIBO, and he said to me, his name was Buck Jones, and he said to me, he goes, you can always tell how the economy is going based on how professional wrestling is going. And it was one of those things in Wall Street they always talked about was, so in the 80s during the boom, pro wrestling we owned 93,000, and it just correlates with everything you just mentioned. And in the 90s, everybody was making money and printing stuff off the dot-com boom went crazy. And then that bubble burst and 9/11 happened. And you look at it throughout, you know, the course of history, it's kind of interesting on that. I just wanted to, you know, give a little shout out to an old mentor of mine who had mentioned that. As soon as you said the economy, I used it. You won't know where I'm going. I'm like, I actually kind of do know where you're going on that.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. Great minds. They think alike on that. And it's, I mean, you know, you're right on the fact that either go back-to-back Mania, the same town, back, because let's face it, TKO, that's their town. They think of Vegas as big fight night. That's all this is, because they're just going, it's hilarious that they're just copying, you know, UFC model kind of thing of, you know, well, we come here all the time, so it's fine. But the lesson they're about to learn real quick is they could be going from WrestleMania at, what is it, Allegiant Stadium to AWA at the Showboat real quick.
I was going to say running Sam's Town like Pete, who ran? ROH did. ROH ran Sam's Town a bunch of times, I think. And yeah, God bless your friend. Sounds like a very smart guy. I will say also too, in a very comedic vein here, the very, very famous example of when Bill Watts knew that the oil bust of the mid to late 80s was hitting the product a little too hard. Have you ever heard the story of how Bill Watts knew that the jig was up and I better sell the territory?
Yes, but remind the listeners.
I will. Kind of the whole thing of like, hey, where are all the whores at?
Yes.
Apparently, yeah, the ladies of the evening, much like pro wrestling, are another very good economic indicator. And a cynic like my dad might say that the two go hand in hand. He's not a big wrestling guy at all. So, you know.
Well, in a certain generation, he wasn't wrong. And if it's in this one, at least they're more discreet about it.
Yes, at least they are. So there is that. And so the product is, again, not in a great place relative to where they were a year ago when they were still. They had essentially sort of like, and this is something Dave Meltzer noted at the time. He said that the John Cena retirement tour is going to paper over a good amount of things happening. And I think he was proved to be exactly right about this, as he generally is. That like you had that going there and then you take that away. And we see, again, as we're going to get into the card here, Uno Momento, that so much of this really just kind of like slapped together, which to me is utterly antithetical to way that WrestleMania is supposed to be. This is supposed to be something where, again, you're war gaming out for this months ahead. You know, they should have the whiteboard there, Titan Towers or whatever the new version of Titan Towers is. And, you know what I mean? Just to kind of like know where you're going with this kind of stuff. But much like, I think it was 2 years ago when they had to do the whole, you know, deviating in direction here thing. Is The Rock going to be involved, not involved, whatever. Sometimes a ripple effect ensues. Sometimes, in fairness, injuries happen, as was the case this year, first with Seth Rollins, who ironically will be the one who's back. Bron Breakker won't be back, even though supposedly he's been cleared. So sometimes you have injuries having to do with it. But what becomes is, and what is essentially the story of this year's card writ large, is a large scale rewriting of it this year, and, you know, decently into the year, I think we would say, and that sort of ripple effect to where it doesn't feel as planned, as laid out as it was. And some things that are happening here, it seems like are setups for things to happen subsequently. And in past shows that I've done with Kyle Ross breaking this down here, we've talked about that as well, that sometimes like when WrestleMania, when a match happens there, that's a setup for like a spring or a summer program, that's kind of different from what you would generally anticipate to be the case. WrestleMania, traditionally, you and I haven't grown up on this, it's supposed to be the destination. And that's what's so jarring about so much of the card this year. It doesn't feel like a destination that's been built to for months and months and months.
I agree on that. I mean, obviously there's the injury bug that hit a lot and changed a lot of booking plans and kind of booking on the fly and, you know, decisions that had to be changed. But you're right in of that. It does not feel like a like the big, like, you know, the story always going into it was like, here's your champion, the challenger wins, whatever. It used to be the Royal Rumble, and they go in, and that was your build to it. And now, and even when they added, you know, the Elimination Chamber stipulation, you know, with for the other championships and everything, I agree with you. This is an interesting WrestleMania in of that everything feels like it is a another leg in a chapter as part of something. Like, and a lot of it, it feels like it could be like, you know, thrown together Mania, because I can't think of, as you said, like you said, I cannot think of one match that 6 months ago that I mean that I would have wrote down and penciled in as being on the show, just based on where they were to where they are. And a lot of that has to do, like I said, has to do with the injuries. You know, they didn't know what was going on with Seth Rollins. They didn't know what, but then there's other things that leaked, you know, that was supposed to be, you know, Rey Mysterio versus Gunther, and both guys are on the show. So who knows what is what is the case?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and the thing of it is too, and going back to the whole thing of like, corporate America doesn't really get pro wrestling. It can wrap its arms around sports entertainment, but even that can be kind of fitful at times. As far as like why they're not selling tickets right now, now again, it maybe Triple H might not feel it's in his best interest to say this, but you can't tell me that Ari Emanuel, Mark Shapiro, whatever, you can't tell me that the brain trust of TKO knows enough about this to know, hey, you know what, guys, this feels slapped together. This doesn't feel well enough built over a period of time. I don't think they understand that. And I think that that's very clear. And that when they seek to then impose potential solutions to it, that's what can just exacerbate things even more, I think.
And as we have seen 2 years in a row now, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, I think we have seen that. And we will continue to see how this manifests itself with this year's card. I do believe that I think it's ESPN2 the first night, and I think it's ESPN the second night. So this will be on the new ESPN app dealio, but a simulcast for the first hour. So you're basically sort of, you know, the card, it's almost essentially sort of like a reverse bell curve as far as like the part in the middle. I guess the part, you know, in between the beginning and the end is basically sort of the fall off both nights to whatever degree. And I will just say this in advance and preface this, and I'm going to note this as we go along, that one of the ways that I kind of grade what a card has going for it is the number of matches where I would consider them to be plausible semi-main events. So what you're looking for from a card like this is to have more than one semi-main event both nights. By default, you should at least have one. But if you're doing things right, you should have three or four both nights, because this is the biggest, you know, card of the year, split over two nights. The first match of the first night, I think, would qualify simply because you have in it, again, you have Jey Uso, who seems like a million years ago, but he main evented one of the nights last year. Albeit, no, I guess he wrestled for the world title in the first match of the first night last year. So maybe he's in the same spot, right? First match, first night. But you've got Jey Uso, you've got Paul Heyman, etc. It's The Vision with Logan Paul, Austin Theory, and then I Show Speed, which is, this is the quintessential Fed thing. It's just to drop a celebrity in here. Versus the Usos, who I believe are still the tag team champions, and LA Knight. They are not? Oh, okay.
The Vision are the tag team champions.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They are. Which, by the way, only in this company, because of, and I know you've goofed on it before, the AEW and the titles and stuff. Nobody in AEW has ever been demoted by getting a title. Like Jey Uso, when he was the tag team champions on one of the two shows, it's not even tag team champions across both shows. Like Jey Uso was like, bye-bye main event Jey Uso. You're now one of the tag team champions on the Monday show. But okay.
That might not. Did you watch any of the singles, Jey Uso singles run? Did you watch a lot of it?
Because, enough, to, enough to know that
I'm going to do a comparison here. It's like the Ultimate Warrior. Once you get past the entrance, that's it. It's done.
I think
more people started seeing through that.
Yes.
And I think between the two, I think Big Jim has always been the more talented one.
Yeah.
But that's, I think he cuts the promo and everything. I don't think Jay's good on the mic, but he had that person. Wrestling fans are simple. You go with one word, yeet, yes, yeah. You know, that's how you get over. He took it and got over it. Good for him. But I just think that if Big Jim was getting in that spot instead of Jay, I think he might have excelled a little bit more. But to me, the Usos are better as a unit. Like, I don't know. I never really bought into the whole – I get where you're coming from. But it's, like, good for them. I'm trying to, you know, elevate, make a star out of him because obviously the audience was behind him. Yeah. But, you know, we shall see. And as far as this match goes, I mean, what – okay. 2-3 years ago, sure, you had the celebrity effect of a Logan Paul and, you know, even an iShow Speed, I guess. But how many of those – I mean, is iShow Speed going to be live streaming during the match? As stupid as that sounds, that's something they should do because it's make it like the referee cam back in the day. Don't go to it all the time, but do something like that because that's why you have him there, to draw the eyes onto your audience. Now, Logan Paul, when you mentioned, you know, stars have fallen, I thought you were going to talk about him. Guy who is at one point like an it celebrity that could actually work and actually put on a good match, to he's just another guy now. He's just another guy on the show. And even just another guy. He's a guy who's filled in as a replacement for other guys. Like, he, whatever was, you know, I didn't see because I wasn't into his whole culture that he was a part of with the YouTube stuff, but he did have an audience. My question now is, after, you know, the past 2 years of WWE, does he still have that same audience?
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. And it's a thing where, and it is funny to see that, like, over the course of the last year, that as far as the degree to which wrestling fans have sort of unrealistically deified Paul Heyman and forgotten about certain aspects of his career and certain aspects of stuff, that everything that he's been a part of the last year, which has been one of the worst years of his career in a long, long, long time as far as what he's been attached to, that, you know, he gave an interview.
No fault of his.
Well, okay, but here's the thing, though. You kind of make it worse when you overcompensate. Because I saw an interview he gave recently where he was comparing the Vision to, this reminds me of the early days of ECW. This reminds me of that locker room then. And I'm like, you know what this reminds me of? Here's what it reminds me of. What if we took Paul Heyman and we made him the manager of the New Blood in WCW in 2000? That's what this reminds me of. It's a lot closer to New Blood than original ECW territory, Jake Digman.
I wouldn't go as that bad, but it is very reminiscent of the Ryback-Axel days when he was the manager of both Curtis Axel and Ryback.
Yeah, and
where they
and
had
again.
The philosophy of anybody we – well, I mean, but those two are – I will give credit. At least Logan Paul and Austin Theory are light years ahead of those two.
They are, but I mean, this is a match where, again, I would consider this to be a valid semi-main event because, again, it's to their audience. To the audience that watches this stuff, they would consider it to be on that level.
It's going to be pure spectacle.
Pure spectacle. I don't really know who's going to win. Don't really care. And, you know, it's kind of a microcosm of the product these days when you say that. I will say the next matchup is a legitimate semi-main event match, again, no qualifications put on it whatsoever. This is one of the things that they have done well. Jacob Fatu versus Drew McIntyre, and this is a thing where, again, you have Drew McIntyre, who is one of the handful of guys who is established as a star, and we'll talk about this subsequently, that it's not a deep roster of guys that they trust at this point to be in the world title matches either night, which is why you tend to get some of the same characters here at various points in time. Drew McIntyre, interestingly enough, has sort of had 1 foot in that world, 1 foot out of that world. Once again, this year, he is not wrestling for one of the world titles. 2 years ago, he was against Seth Rollins. But Drew McIntyre is at the very least close He is more or less on that level, and he is the most recent champion before Cody Rhodes won it back. Jacob Fatu is a guy that they are looking to build, and as much as I've been skeptical about what they've done with their prospect development the last couple of years and this whole thing of how it reminds me of, you know, what they say in football, if you have two quarterbacks, it means you don't really have one. When the Fed fans talk about there's this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy, I'm like, yeah, you're kind of making my point for me. You should be able to identify just a handful of guys that you feel like can be big stars, and others that maybe if things go well and you figure things out, whatever, maybe it might be plausible. Jacob Fatu is one of those guys. Obafemi is one of those guys. We'll talk about him a little bit later. And seeing him here in this match against Drew McIntyre, my guess is that this match is to really make Jacob Fatu. Drew McIntyre is in great position to be able to do that. Both of these guys can really deliver in the ring for guys of their size. It will be a slobber knocker, and it will be, as far as guys of their size, I'll even go a step further. And this is a match I'm going to reference a little bit later in the night. But I the WrestleMania, the one in Orlando in 2017, I can't even think of, what was it, 33, I think? So,
maybe?
Yeah.
The one with the roller coaster?
Yes. So okay. Brock and Goldberg, that five-minute match there that was like one of the best five-minute matches ever, because that's basically what you were going to get at that point. This can be the Trillionaires version of that as far as a slobber knocker. That's what I would say. This thing's going to go well more than 5 minutes, and it's going to the amount of concentrated goodness you got in that match, you're going to get that in this match in 15 to 20, I think, Jake.
I love myself an absolute great hoss fight. Mm-hmm. You know that about me, Rick Morris. When I told you I went back and I went back and watched King Kong Bundy versus Uncle Elmer, and you were like, "What the heck is wrong with you?" Hey, by the way, it's absolutely as terrible as you remember, but that's what you like. That's, you know, I viewed it from the eyes of, if I was watching these two in an MMA fight, what would I see? That's what would happen: one punch, an elbow drop, that'd be it, to be done. As far as this one goes, so I'm very excited for the match itself, and I wanted so badly to see, like, you know, what they were going to do here in it, except for the fact that the stipulation is what takes me out of it, okay?
Okay.
Because, sorry, I've got to switch rooms.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Sorry about that. Bear with me, viewers.
Hey, this is nothing compared to the NFL draft last year when we had Chris Galloway in a car, okay? At least you're not driving on the turnpike while you're doing this. Yeah.
This is why I'm not driving on the turnpike.
Yeah. Oh, now you're breaking up, unfortunately. You there, bud?
Are just excuses. Uh-huh. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. You're back.
Like, there's stipulation.
Now I lost you again.
Me?
You back? You there?
Am I here now?
Yeah. Hopefully you stay.
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Do you want to start back over? What do you want to do?
Yeah. Start with your point there. Yeah.
Okay. So, I was excited for this match, you know, when it seemed like this is what they were leading to, but just knowing that the WWE style of booking, especially when they start off with a stipulation match, traditionally in the history of professional wrestling, the stipulation match is the blow-off. However, in WWE style booking, a stipulation, like a street fight, it just gives them an excuse for someone to do a job with not actually having to lose. Whatever the that he did something to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I have this feeling Drew's going to win, but the feud, back to what we talked about before, the feud will continue because of the way Drew won in the street, and that the end result will eventually lead to a, I'm hoping, a Hell in a Cell where they have like the shades of McIntyre and Punk, how great that was, or just something where it's a definitive winner. That's why I don't like when they do last man standing, steel cage, like steel cage stipulation in the WWE, as pointed out by Jesse Ventura, is the worst stipulation ever. Who wins a fight by leaving?
That is true.
It's the dumbest concept ever in history.
It is. It absolutely is.
I can just imagine if we did a Cage Thunder event or kind of escape the cage. What? That makes no sense.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's just a reason, an excuse to get to a caveat that was to give guys back in the '80s and into the '90s the heels a reason to not do a job, in my opinion.
I mean, unless Drew McIntyre is like literally parking a steamroller on Jacob Fatu's bare chest, I don't want to see him lose this match. Like this would be a thing. Like the fact that unless Drew McIntyre, unless he puts a steamroller on Jacob Fatu's bare chest, that's the only way he should lose. Like Jacob Fatu should not lose this match, because again, this is a guy who they have portrayed as being, and it's a little bit fraught here because of some of the, you could get into stereotypes and whatnot. Not like they've ever stereotyped Samoans and Tongans before, right? But Jacob Fatu is being portrayed, at least in ring now. He's now giving more coherent interviews. But he's being portrayed as, and again, a fraught word to use, animalistic in the ring. But, you know, in a good way, if there is a good way. But like, a match where there are no rules is a match he should not lose. Like, I don't want to hear it like, well, he got screwed over in that match. A guy like Jacob Fatu doesn't get screwed over. A guy like Jacob Fatu victimizes people in a match like this. So if Drew McIntyre wins, I think it's a big misfire. And again, I don't put it past him, but I think it would be a big, big, big mistake. Speaking of big mistakes, let's get to the build for the next one here. This is a match that, when you're looking at either of the women's title matches, they should be plausible semi-main events for a night. Not this one. Stephanie Vakur with the Women's World Championship against Liv Morgan. And they're looking at it like, okay, well, Liv is over and the whole thing with Judgment Day and everything like that. But like Stephanie Vakur, like, well, let's face it. They signed her out of spite after Forbidden Door so that AEW couldn't have her. And you'll never convince me otherwise because it's like, whoa, look at what they're doing. They put the world title on her. Like, okay, but that doesn't mean they're really like doing anything with her. Like, what is her character? What is she all about at this point in time? You know, versus Liv Morgan is a very definable character. And Liv Morgan, you know, from a personality standpoint, can elevate a lot of what she's got to work with. But she can't elevate this into being a viable semi-main event match here. This is not a match that you'll ever convince me that people care about in terms of the build of this thing and what's been done and really the way that Stephanie Vakur has been wasted throughout in this. And again, I know I'm saying this about somebody holding one of their top titles, but if you don't, you know, this is supposed to be the Fed where they're all about bringing out the personality and the persona and everything like that. And not just like, oh, so-and-so's a great wrestler. Stephanie Vakur is one of the greatest women's wrestlers in the world. But what have they done to make you care about her? Zilch. And so, again, whatever happens here, whatever. I mean, it's probably the death of Stephanie Vakur if they put the title back on Liv Morgan because it'll look like a failed experiment. So my guess is they stay with Stephanie just so that they're not, you know, completely giving up on her. But I don't know. What are your thoughts? I'm guessing that you're probably less pessimistic about this match than I am. All right, Jennings Digman has dropped momentarily here, and we will effort to get him back on Uno Momento. I think he was probably a bit thrown by how lackluster the build has been for Stephanie Vakur v. Liv Morgan, and I can't fault him if indeed that was the case, because it is just it's been a very, very, very rough build, and Jake is back now, and I was saying, Jake, I cannot fault you if you were so thrown by how bad the build has been for Stephanie Vakur v. Liv Morgan that it caused you technical difficulties.
I was experiencing a little bit of technical difficulties there, but you mentioned, I did catch part of it. You mentioned like, what have they done with Stephanie's character?
Yeah.
And this is the part here where I'm going to go out on a limb and make my bold prediction like I did a few years ago. I say Dirty Dom turns on, and the Judgment Day turn on Liv Morgan, and Dirty Dom goes with Stephanie Vaquer and brings out like that persona, because okay. that crowd is ready to cheer Liv Morgan. They're okay. ready to go nuts for her, and that's just, you know, that is my bold prediction there, because, you know, like I said, like you said, they need to do something with her.
Yeah.
Liv winning the title back doesn't do anything for her at this point, and they need to use it to make another star, and if they can do that with Stephanie, and they can, you know, Latino Heat 2.0 and Latina Heat or whatever they want to do with it, or do something like that, bring some of that personality out in her, and I think she would make for one hell of a fiery villain and aligned with Dirty, and the fact that Dirty Dom could go healer again on somebody on another heel, it would just be fantastic, and the crowd would eat it up, in my opinion. So that's my bold prediction of this one, that Stephanie Vaquer retains after Dirt, whether it's quote unquote accidental at the time or not, but the end game is going to be he ends up with Stephanie Vaquer.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh my gourd. That's a clip and save right there. That's a great idea, Jake. And again, they should absolutely go in that direction. I think Stephanie Vaquer could really shine in that role. It would give her the personality that they have not allowed her to show to this point. If she were in that role, Liv Morgan doesn't need to be with them anymore. She would be a very badass baby face at this point, or anti-hero, or whatever you want to call her. Yeah, that would be awesome. Hopefully that's what they do. The next match up here, so they've decided to go now in the last year or two with secondary women's titles on both shows, which, again, I just really kind of shake my head at this, like as though they think that they have enough depth at this point to be able to do this. By the way, if they were still running single brand and not pay-per-views anymore, I refuse to say premium live events, but whatever you want to call them, ESPN shows, okay? If they were still running single brand ones, then I could kind of get it. Otherwise, you're kind of forcing it here that when you do a big show like this or SummerSlam, you have to turn it into a de facto night of champions by wedging all these matches in here. So you've got the women's Intercontinental title with AJ Lee defending against Becky Lynch. And again, we've seen them in the ring before. This is a match where, again, these two names here, I mean, if this were the first time out between them, I think it could be plausible that you could be talking about, you know, if this was the first time they locked up, maybe a plausible semi-main for Saturday night. But once again, I don't believe that it is, notwithstanding the names that they have. And I think Becky, as somebody who had one of the great all-time runs that a woman has ever had from 2018 until the pregnancy hiatus began in 2020. I really think, again, and it's the highest of heights that she was at. So even diminishing returns isn't that big of a criticism, because she was at a point that few, if any, women have ever gotten to. But I just feel like it's kind of been diminishing returns with her the last couple of years. AJ Lee, okay, there was curiosity about the comeback. We've seen it. We've seen the two of them in the ring together before. To me, it's kind of like it is what it is at this point.
Yeah, it's one of these matches that doesn't need the Women's Intercontinental Championship to it to make it happen. You could just, you know, based off the feud that's there, I think just based on the style of WWE booking, Becky Lynch gets her win back here. She gets her championship back, goes on to do whatever. Maybe AJ Lee gets, you know, one more feud with some up-and-comer, and then, you know, The Undertaker rides out and tells her she's going to the Hall of Fame. And that's and she calls it a career. I don't see, she's not here, neither, I don't see her and Punk being here for a very long time. They're both, you know, I see AJ Lee, obviously she's a part-time talent at best. Heck, this might be the end of her run for that matter. You never know.
Well, I mean, nobody's ever explained this to me, too, that, like, as somebody who retired, I think, with, like, neck injuries, and then, like, when CM Punk would get asked about her over the years, like, oh, no, she couldn't come back. Like, that sure got glossed over once the paycheck got big enough, right? I mean, I hope it's not a matter where, you know, I hope it's not a matter of where she's taking dumb chances, you know, just to collect on the money, because, again, and she seems like a very, very smart, self-aware person. She's become an author. She's written a lot about her life and lessons learned. She seems like one of the more insightful people that I've seen in this business. So you would think that she, of all people, would know that, like, you know, money can't buy health and blah, blah, blah. But so I got to hope I got to hope that her neck thing was never as bad as it was represented at the time. This is a business built on a work, so hopefully they were overplaying how bad her neck was. The next match here, boy, how's this for a segue? A match that could lead to neck issues potentially here. Although, you know what? I thought initially this was maybe going to be a tables match, but I guess it's not. So it might not be as hard on the next. Just a fatal four-way tag team match for the women's tag team title. Irresistible Forces, Nia Jax, Lash Legend. Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss is another team. Bayley and Lyra Valkyrie and the Bella Twins. Be back for this one. So, like, again, this is another one where it is what it is. Let's wedge a bunch of women into this match that we don't have another place for them on the card. It serves as a viable thing to keep Charlotte out of one of the semi-main event matches or women's title match or whatever you would want to call it on either night here, because I guess they regard it as a complete non-negotiable that Charlotte Flair is going to be on the card. So she's here in this match. And in fairness, her and Alexa Bliss have been a surprisingly good tag team. Not that they both don't bring a lot to it on their own, but the chemistry that they have formed as a tag team is a tribute to both of them. Nevertheless, again, I mean, if I were even a fan of their product in the year 2026, I don't think that this would be a match that I would be up for, much less the way I feel about the product now.
This is what they call the good old-fashioned bathroom break match.
Yep.
Fortunately, I have a feeling no matter how good of a performance they do, this is going to go back to the thing, to quote Rick Morris, of moment mania, that you like to say we're all about making moments. And
yes,
whether they deserve it or not, the Bella Twins are going to win the damn tag team titles in order to do that moment, because they never have. So they can get their WrestleMania moment. And I think that's what this is going to be. Because let's face it, Charlotte and Lexi are eventually going to split up. They're going to split up the other two, and by the other two, I mean Lyra and Bayley. So the only thing I don't think they're going to have a long run with the belts, but I think they're going to do that and create that moment, and this is going to be that. And, is what it is. And I don't think they're going to pin the champions. I think they'll pin, Lexi after Charlotte screws up, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Someone miscommunication, something. Or pick anybody other than, I don't think it would be the champ. So you could take the same scenario with Bayley and Lyra Valkyria. Same situation, but I think the end result's the same. It ends with the Bella Twins as your WWE Undisputed or whatever women's tag team champions.
You know what? If they're going to do that, if they're going to go all moment mania on this thing, then can we at least get AI Howard Finkel to appear on the Titantron to make the announcement? And new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions, the Bella Twins. Let's at least do that, Jake.
No, I'd rather just see John, the host John, walk out and tip his hat.
Well, again, this will be a match that will just basically be there. The next match, I'm going to compare this next one here. I think this is a legitimate semi-main event match for the night. I'm going to compare this to a match earlier in the night as far as how impactful I think it can be, and in terms of how much it can deliver bell to bell. Seth Rollins versus Gunther in a singles match, which, again, as far as build goes, all I know is again, as a fan of the good old AE Dub, I find myself having to fend off criticism a lot of times of like, well, they deliver matches, but where's the storyline between the competitors? Well, okay, Fed fans, what do you got for this one here? I mean, I can see where they're going with this. My headcanon is probably going to be what ends up playing out here, because Gunther's already dropped a hint to Paul Heyman about this. This is probably going to lead to Paul Heyman, you owe me a match with Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. This is the match where he gets to retire. Where he gets to retire Brock Lesnar, which, by the way, this is where a gimmick can become a little bit of a dead end for a performer. So Gunther, having retired Goldberg, John Cena, and AJ Styles, by the way, it would seem like there's nowhere to go but down after that trifecta, but like, was the match with Ray really going to be for his career? I wasn't hearing that reported on, but like, you can't do him and Ray at Mania. Ray loses, but then he's back wrestling again, right? Like, the whole point of Gunther is that he retires legends. And so they dodged a bullet. not putting that one together because I don't think they're ready to tell Mysterio Sr. it's time for you to retire. Now, Seth Rollins here, the irony is he is at the point of 11 years of being a main eventer in the Fed, which is, you know, an eternity in that place. So, I mean, like, Seth Rollins is probably borderline at the point of where, like, hey, I challenge you for your career. They're not going there with this match, and well, they're not, because Seth Rollins is one of the few guys, like I said before, he's above the glass ceiling here. Gunther, interestingly, sort of has one foot on either side of the glass ceiling at this point. This is a guy that didn't have a spot on the card until this match came together after the Ray Ray match. And the fact that they were looking to put him in with Mysterio, with all due respect, and I've seen Mysterio on one of these Smart Mark message boards referred to as maybe the greatest TV wrestler of all time, which when you think about it, you could make an awfully good case for that. But nevertheless, in the year 2026, that is not who Gunther should be wrestling at WrestleMania after he's retired that trifecta of guys, particularly if it's not a career match against Rey Mysterio. It's a step down in 2026 to wrestle Rey Mysterio because of the way that he's been portrayed over the years. He's not portrayed as a main eventer at this point. Seth Rollins is. The match makes sense if they go in the direction of Gunther versus Seth versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, if this is the beginning of the setup for that. But again, you're using WrestleMania to set up something else here. You're giving us two great wrestlers together who are going to give a great match, probably 4.5 stars if everything's firing on all cylinders. But how they got here to this match is extraordinarily ragged, Jake Digman.
Oh, yeah, it is ridiculously ragged. But I think coming out the other side of this, none of that will matter, only because I think they are going story. Versus Brock Lesnar, his career at SummerSlam, that makes perfect. I also think this match is going to be used. It is as the catalyst for the return of Bron Breakker, who has been cleared to come back, and we're going to get everything back on track with that feud. Is what this was supposed to be to begin with. So unfortunately, it is a placeholder. It is a thrown together thing, but with what was thrown together, I think we're going to get much better than we would have had it been the Gunther v. Ray. I think we're going to end up with a kick-ass wrestling match that's going to steal the show on night one. That's going to be a lot of fun. I think Gunther's going to get the win to further the story along there. And whether it be at Mania or the Raw afterwards, it's the return of Bron Breakker, and then we're off and running again with Rollins versus Division.
Yeah, and there's been some thought that maybe Bron Breakker ends up costing him the match here, which again, and the thought being, hey, him versus Seth Rollins could help carry us through the spring period here. But again, the notion of using WrestleMania to set up anything else, that's one of the myriad of factors we're talking about before here with the slow ticket sales this year. The sense that WrestleMania is not this year a destination, but it's a jumping off point to the next thing. You're not selling out a football stadium on the jumping off point for the spring tour, Jake Digman.
Oh, I mean, are we going to do it? Are we going to do two nights of Backlash?
Yeah, from another football stadium. I think not after the experience we're having here. Maybe it'll hold it in Las Vegas again if they're feeling really dumb. But
I hear the showboat's open.
Yeah, exactly. The main event of night one, Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton with, I can't even believe I'm saying this, with Pat McAfee. Singles match for the Undisputed WWE Championship. So, again, not trusting in and of itself the whole thing of, you know, you have the built-in story of Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, you know, master versus pupil, whatever. I will say one of the funniest things I've seen on Twitter recently, and this covers a lot of ground, is how pissed off is the one juror in Mississippi who pushed to acquit Ted DiBiase Jr., hoping he would be the voice on the phone.
I mean, oh, that's great.
I knew you would enjoy that. I knew you would eat that up. But again, it's one of those things. The irony of the fact that Randy Orton is going to get cheered here is the sense of, if you go back to the breakup of Legacy that was done at what was it, WrestleMania 25 in 2010, is this is not something that's really much remembered, but that feud, because generally speaking in wrestling history, double turns are rare and remembered. You know, Hart and Austin. I'd even go so far as to say Ziggler, Del Rio. We remember them. We remember the things that happened here. This is one people sleep on, is that like Rhodes and DiBiase were getting so, you know, booed as a couple of wimpy a-holes, basically, who were kind of whiny about Randy Orton bullying them, that it ended up being a double turn. And he's like, screw it. We're going to go with Randy Orton as the de facto face in this feud. And here, it's not exactly that. Randy Orton's done a heel turn, but it's a thing where you talked about this before of like that there's people who grew up on Randy Orton and, you know, are nostalgic for him and whatever. And like, I'm not trying to be mean here, but I feel sorry for those people. I pity those people. Like, I grew up on some real badass wrestlers and stuff. Randy Orton has been somebody for most of his career who's bored the piss out of me. Just largely because, again, he always looks like he's mailing it in. People make these comparisons to Barry Windham, and like maybe physically there's some resemblance and they're lanky and they can do this and that and whatever. But it's like Randy Orton, it just always looks like he's got a book of stamps that he's getting ready to mail it in with. Has just bored the piss out of me outside of the RKO. And so, you know, him and Cody, they're going to have a, you know, decent enough match. Shades of Cody and John Cena at WrestleMania a year ago. I mean, Cena was able to go out there and do probably about what Randy Orton's going to be able to do here. And then we're just going to kind of see how it goes. My guess is that it's Cody coming out with the title at the other end here. Maybe they decide to run with Randy as a heel champion here. I don't know. I mean, it is the year 2026. So, I mean, Randy Orton having any kind of shelf life in a position like this. I realize the rest of the world's not as jaded about him as I am, and I'm sure you're not. So, you know, take it away with what I'm sure is going to be another point of view on this, Jake.
So I find it interesting that Randy Orton has this, like, new lease on life in, mm-hmm. like, 2026, that even going back to, like, 2025, that, you know, I mentioned, you know, the dads bringing their kids to the shows now. Apparently everybody forgot about Chin Lock Mania, and just, like, all this things that, like, even when Randy, quote-unquote, turned heel, I just thought he turned more... to be won mm-hmm. by the crowd reaction. Booked Cody Rhodes. You mentioned, like, you know, him and Legacy, and they were like these whiny old twerps, and like him and DiBiase. I don't see much has changed on it. Everything of the booking of Cody Rhodes to me is he's been the heel the entire time since he came back. Like, I don't understand the whole, like, and what they've done to say, oh, he's a babyface, other than his dad was Dusty Rhodes. Everything to me that he does is self-serving. And his character, I mean, not the person, but the character, it's like, it's all self-serving. And it reminds me too much of the shades of the John Cena babyface booking back in the day, where how they totally book him as a babyface doesn't help him at all. In that, like, you know, when people turn on him, they always cheer for the people who turn on him. Because they want to see him get his ass kicked, because he's not, like, it's hard to describe, but I don't feel like he connects to the audience in a way that is expected to be. Like, I don't get the Hogan, Austin, Cena vibes. I get, like, you know, I get a politician vibe. Like, he's telling you something, but he doesn't mean it. And I think that's part of the reason why I do Japan. And again, it all boils down to, like, you know, the way the character's booked. And we're going to put Orton, you know, what you think is what you. Well, I could see them going one of two ways. See them, you know, having Cody.
You're breaking up again, buddy.
Interested in now?
Uh huh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back.
Am I back?
Yeah.
Okay. One, thanks to, like, you know, the way they've. I'm the least interested in it now. No better way to sell a stadium by having a podcast hosts come on your show and tell everybody how much your show sucks and we're all idiots for watching it. Yeah, because that's often worked in the past to sell ticket sales. No one likes the shooty shoot stuff, brother. It doesn't work. Nobody wants to watch a show and be like, you know, oh my God, you know, you're absolutely right about this, but you know, you're not supposed to say it on the show. It didn't do anything to, like, you know, drive ticket sales and shit like that. It makes people just not want to tune in. So this is one I'll watch it. I'll, you know, probably have a few cocktails in me by this point because I'm going to be doing both shows on night two. So I'll be watching back-to-back shows. So by this one, hopefully I'm feeling pretty good. And, you know, hopefully it's just, you know, I hate to say it, but fun. I don't know. I think it's going to be an overbooked WWE main event mess with twists and turns, and we'll see what happens, and a ref bump where the ref stays dead for 20 minutes. I mean, are they going to do that back-to-back nights? Probably. Who knows? But, yeah, I just put a gun to my head. Fine, I'll say Randy Orton wins to a Thunder Salvation, but I could also very much see Cody Rhodes winning to a John Cena WrestleMania 22 response.
Yeah, I could see that. A couple thoughts on this. I mean, as far as, again, the shooty shoot stuff, the absolute nadir of any of that, which I've already referenced one. But if I'm making multiple references to WCW 2000 when I'm talking about your product, things are not going well, okay? This is Russo 2000 stuff as far as whining about the product. And then, like, when the McAfee thing got over like a wet fart, both Cody Rhodes and CM Punk going to the "who booked this crap" stuff. Like, you don't want to do that. No matter how bad it was, you don't want to get to "who booked this crap." You don't want to do the whole fake shoot, you know, thing here. You don't want to do that. But they're doing it anyways. And when you look at this, when you look at the way that the booking has gone with Cody Rhodes, you know, you make a very good point that there's real comparisons to how they botched it with John Cena over the years and made him the most unlikable babyface of all time. Quote unquote baby face, I think we'd have to say. But I think part of it is, I just saw somebody making this point on another one of these Smart Mark message boards recently. With Cody Rhodes, it's a thing where he's got to complete the story. That was 2 years ago.
When story you say sucks. Somebody, I want to read something else.
But when it's like he has to finish the story. But by definition, what lies beyond the finish of the story? For Cody Rhodes, it was all about doing what his dad had never done, holding the title his dad had never held. That was 2 years ago. So it's a thing where, like, I'm so sick and tired of all the goofs out there on the internet that love to say, oh, Hangman Page, it's all in the chase with that guy. Just because he's had two epic chases and he's had two title reigns that haven't necessarily been the longest. Like, again, his title reigns haven't lived up to the chases, but that's because it's been two of the greatest chases of the 21st century, probably. Hangman Page takes a lot of unfair crap about the title reign never lives up to the build. What about Cody? What the hell's happened with Cody in the last 2 years that's come close to the build of him going after Roman Reigns and finally getting the job done there? A term that I used before, he gets the title back from John Cena last year on a wet fart of where, you know, they do a panic John Cena face turn 2 days before the match or the day before or whatever the hell it was. And then it was a really good match, but it was just like, what are we doing here? And these meandering feuds.
I set the pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. That they don't know how to book them.
Right? They get panicked and they press a button.
They do. They
press. It's not even a button. It's the men in black that you stare into, and it's like, you know, hey, you saw none of this. Boop, never happened. It's like, what?
Yeah.
That's
what they love to do. They love to retcon things from history, and it becomes a matter also where, you know, they have him in a spot here. Now, I will say this in a complimentary sense of what they've been doing with him since the beginning of the year. I referenced this to you off air. This is not something you're seeing, but this is something that I'm seeing. And that's the whole thing with wrestling. It's all about the individual perception here. But I think Cody's been more interesting since he lost the title to Drew and then there was the chase and got it back, in the sense of where they're not going to go all the way with this like they did with Bret Hart in 97. There's not a Cody heel turn coming. But the lead up to it, like Bret, when he first came back, in late 96. He had the really good match with Austin, but then he was kind of in no man's land, like loses the title and whatever. But like, as he got more and more frustrated and more bitter, Bret Hart in the lead up to WrestleMania 13, an all-time putrid WrestleMania outside of, you know, the match or two that really kind of stand out. But as far as the build and everything else on the card, the product was not in a great place at that time, to put it mildly. But what they were doing with Bret, even before he snapped and turned heel, or turned heel in the United States, face on the rest of the world, that part was interesting. And I'm seeing shades of that with Cody. Like, you're not liking what you're seeing, and I get that. But like, and it's coming off as whiny to you, and I understand how that could be the case. But like, to me, they're trying to give Cody that edge like Bret had in early 97. And I'm not sure, some of it might be a swing and a miss, but I applaud the effort. I got to be fair here. For as much as I criticize the product, where I see them trying to do something, I think they're trying to make him more interesting. I think they're trying to make him less of a pure white bread baby face, because that's what's getting him booed. It's right. It's been unsuccessful, Jake. I'll give you that.
But
it's been unsuccessful.
The problem is they've only done that in the past, like, month.
Right. Well, ever since he lost to Drew, though, I think he got more.
Okay.
Then he was going after Jacob Fatu, and he seemed like more of a true tweener. Jacob Fatu,
okay.
I think,
I'll
was the
that,
face.
Yeah.
That's what I'm, like, making Cody more tweener-ish at various points in time. Now he's just kind of back to being a face against Randy Orton. So, in a way, and we're really in the weeds here, I think it's because they're deviating and they're going back to pure baby face against evil Randy Orton. I think he was more interesting when he was that tweener character that they were moving towards. And I think that's the way forward with Cody, is that you have to make him this guy where it's like, you know what? I'm sick and tired of taking all this crap from people and the people that think I'm being handed stuff and this and that and whatever. I'm sick and tired of that. You want me, come get me. You know, whatever, and not be as much of a fan pandering putz as he's been really ever since he got back to WWE. Because again, they're starting to get to the point where he got to an AEW, and in AEW, he resisted turning heel. And here, you know, there's no Tony Khan that's going to say to him, whatever you want to do, boss. No,
right.
No, here, somebody's going to force him to, and that's where push is going to come to shove. And maybe there's a double turn on the horizon here with these two, but I don't think so. Not here, not now. And with McAfee being in there, I I'm not a McAfee guy at all. I mean, it's just his whole shtick has never gotten over with me, whether it be his talk show or anything else. He's just, you know, he's a dumb jock that says bro a lot is what I consider him to be. I've never been interested in Pat McAfee, so it's not doing anything for me. And for my cynicism about the company, I just regard this as like the quintessential thing they could do, is to drag Pat McAfee into the middle of this and just obviously make it more of a stink bomb.
I just think Pat McAfee is horribly miscast in this. He could add something to the product as an announcer or whatever, as, like, you know, the enthusiastic representative of the fan. But this is just, it makes no sense, and it's just dumb.
It is dumb, and I don't know where they're going to go with this. And
It'll disappear on Monday.
It will.
Go nowhere with it. It'll be gone. It'll be never brought up again. It'll be like The Rock, like, coming back and, like, you know, at whatever that pay-per-view was where he, like, you know, counted to three and slit his throat. It'll go nowhere.
Yep. And the one thing we know is that this is going to be overbooked tripe, and that's how they're going to end night one.